This is Sunday Skate on Sports Radio WEEI. Stanley Cup Finals Edition.
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and the NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey.
Like it is sure.
Yeah.
With Ken Laird from the Mutt and Callahan Show.
We're a bunch of criminals. We ought to be in jail. That's all there is to it.
Pete Blackburn from CBS Sports.
What are you guys doing?
Putting on the foil.
Yeah, you want some?
No.
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Matt Kalman.
Be a great one. None of that stinking
root beer. Lace him up for some Bees talk right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
As promised, got Blackburn's name in, and he is almost on payroll. So both of my guarantees about to come true here as we get to the Stanley Cup Finals. Finally, welcome, boys.
Why are you still in the intro?
Don't get cocky now. This is my first message to you guys, all right? I missed an hour last week, and then you guys got a special bone thrown your way Thursday night. Not bad. Not a bad job. But I've got to say, you went into Laura Branigan right off the hop in the 10 o'clock hour Thursday night, and then you never paid off on the tees. I sat around for an hour waiting. I had no idea what Pete was talking about, this whole thing with DJ and the...
We got around to it.
Yeah, an hour later. I mean...
Hey, it's a tease.
That's a terrible tease, and it was an awful start to the
By
show.
The way,
otherwise, it was
Stanley
pretty good.
Cup final, not finals.
That's right.
Okay.
Gotta re-record the intro now.
I'm gonna re-record that. Stanley Cup final singular edition of the program. You want to get the Branigan stuff out of the way? Has there been any resolution to this?
No,
she's dead, right? The author of
She's still
Gloria.
Dead.
Yeah.
Did she write the song? And I know she wrote the song. She sang.
No, it's a cover song.
Oh, it is?
She covered, yeah.
Who was the original?
Umberto Tozzi, some Italian guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Learning all kinds of things this morning. But this was picked up very organically by the Blues midseason, as people know by now. We only have 2 weeks to just basically hammer this into the ground.
Oh, my God.
But Pete is very active on social media with DJ Bean, formerly of this parish. And they have their own podcast, Brunch. And at some point, you want to fill in the details of what else happened
here?
Yeah,
we decided to, quote-unquote, steal Gloria because we wanted a theme song for the Bruins. And we decided there was nothing better than Gloria, and we loved what the Blues were doing. So we decided to hop on board, and Blues fans got quite ticked off. And then the estate of Laura Branigan apparently was furious.
Estate.
Furious, yes. Whoever is running her Twitter account is furious that we're trying to steal Gloria.
Well, you know it's Kathy now. It's somebody named Kathy. Yeah.
Kathy from Other Half Entertainment.
Okay. Do you picture Kathy looking anything less than the Kathy cartoon? I mean, it's totally got to be her.
She's got to be raking it in, though, doing pretty well these days. It's certainly been quite the phenomena. All part of the intangible edge the Blues have going into this series. We'll get
to
the detailed matchups a little bit later in the show. But here's where I want to start with you guys. Who gets the most credit for the Bruins being here where they are, third cup final in 9 years, in search of their seventh Stanley Cup, 20th cup final appearance in the franchise history? Kalman, who is just so, reactionary, whoever gets thrown to the podium, he writes a column about it. So Cam Neely trots out there Friday, and it just, like clockwork. Hours later, Cam Neely is a Hall of Famer in the making as an executive. Meanwhile, after the Sagan trade, all I heard in
every
this town
organization makes mistakes.
Was that Cam Neely is a figurehead and should not be given any blame for any bad trade or decision
and
made
buddy
by
Mark
anybody
James
in
is still
the organization.
Harping on the 2015 draft, but you have to overcome. That's the thing. You overcome these mistakes.
That wasn't a bad draft. They got
DeBrusque.
Jake DeBrusque.
Yeah, well, one out of three ain't bad. I don't
James
know.
James is right
saying.
Again. He's focusing on the correct things. You're talking up Cam Neely, a sure
three
sign they should have dropped the puck
a
week
years.
Ago. What does he do? Is he the GM or is he not the GM?
He calls the shots on everything.
He does?
Well, he has to sign off on what Sweeney does for sure.
So Sweeney makes the decisions
he
and he signs off on it.
Absolutely.
So who deserves the credit? Sweeney
or
Cam?
Well, no, it goes beyond the moves. It goes to making this. Listen, when Cam Neely became the president, first he was vice president for several years.
Right.
And they became a laughingstock, right? No one
lost that series
here.
To the Flyers.
Well, no,
and
I'm talking before that.
Oh,
I'm talking when he
that.
Was when he came in as the vice president. They were a laughingstock. They had missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. They traded Joe Thornton. They thought Alexei Zhamnov was better than Peter Forsberg. It was a disaster here. And then Cam Neely came in and started to rehab them. Then he eventually became the president in 2010 after the embarrassing loss to the Flyers. No one wanted to come here. Now you got guys like Marchand and Pastrnak taking deals that are like half of what they would make on the open market.
But correct me if I'm wrong, his elevation from VP to president was mostly done for goodwill. Face of the franchise type stuff. Because Peter Chiarelli was very well entrenched as the general manager.
That's the thing, to make it the face of the franchise and make this franchise something players wanted to come to. Players wanted to not just come here but stay here and are willing to take hometown discounts and stay
within
the cap.
Because Neely went from VP to president, that was all of a sudden going to sway
players? Well, because he didn't have much
say
before that. It was all Peter. And then Cam came in. Cam runs the business side too, remember? He designed the Winter Classic jerseys.
Whoa. And if you read Matt's piece, he encouraged them to go to China before the season. So Hall of Fame material as far as
absolutely.
I'm concerned, Pete.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think we've reached the saturation point. That Kalman, Cam Neely.
too many days off.
Too many days off.
Listen, the point was Brendan Shanahan. Who else did I mention in that? All these old players that of caliber of his that have tried their hand at this have failed. I'm sorry, Brendan Shanahan right now is a failure. He hasn't got out of the first round, even though he was handed Austin Matthews.
Right.
There's been several others that have gone in there.
Steve
Eiserman. They've come and gone.
Well,
Eiserman wasn't a president. He was a general manager. I said that it has to do with handling the business and the hockey side and being a president.
But what is Neely? Neely is not the general manager.
Right.
Correct?
Correct.
So he's a Hall of Fame executive in your mind, even though he doesn't call the
shots.
Because
the franchise is thriving. Have they had an empty seat since he took over in that building?
Well, okay, but everybody deserves some credit when they're in the Cup
Finals.
I didn't
give him all the credit.
You called him a Hall of Famer.
He is three trips to the finals in 9 years, and he's not even close to done yet.
Who deserves the most credit, Pete? It's not Cam Neely.
The person that assembles the team probably deserves the most credit.
I would tend to agree with that, and that would be not Cam Neely.
Right, exactly. If you're toting three Stanley Cup finals,
Cam offered you like a spot in the organization
it has nothing to do with the credit for this season alone. It's a track record of a decade.
But if you're
where they've only missed the playoffs twice,
three Stanley Cup final appearances, you're giving credit to the people that assembled the team.
Jeff Gordon deserves more credit than Cam Neely.
He assembled the team starting with Don Sweeney. He didn't go outside the organization to replace Peter. He didn't go and get some big name Brian Burke type guy to come in here. He not only brought in Don Sweeney, but trusted Sweeney's vision to say, okay, we can miss the playoffs one more time, and you're going to stay here. And then fire the coach and change everything. Blow that draft, that 15 draft. No one really took the fall for it. And here you are in the Cup final.
They got their goaltender of the future and Jake DeBrusque in that draft.
Goaltender of the future.
Now, did he even choose Sweeney? Was that even Cam Neely's choice? Or was that the Jacobs family?
No, Cam Neely, they're not.
That's
Cam's
choice?
They're deferring to him, for sure.
Okay. I mean, in that case, that's legitimate then. But Sweeney was in the organization as well, so it's not like
he
promoted him. So it's not like it was an unknown that Cam Neely went to China and found Don Sweeney and combed the earth.
Maybe he found something else in China. You never know. He might be bringing back some prospects.
But Sweeney, if you recall, when the Bruins were down 3-2 to the Leafs, and you guys, I'll bring it up again, both declared the Bruins dead, predicted Toronto was going to win the series when pressured by me. I think I was in Canada at the time, as I am every week. But we were criticizing Sweeney quite a bit on that show. Certainly callers were. I know Maria, one of our staples, was very anti-Sweeney. But in two rounds, I guess Coyle and Johansson alone, their turnaround throughout the postseason has made a huge difference in how we view Sweeney. But you recall at the time, the fourth line was getting criticized.
I don't have to recall. I've been living it. It's never mind the fourth line, but that Johansson-Coyle thing, I mean, obviously it didn't really light up until, remember, Johansson was out sick for 2 or 3 games in that first round series. I mean, this is the way the playoffs work, right? If they lose game 7 or game 6, we're raking Sweeney over the coals.
Right. And 2 weeks later, Cam Neely's a Hall of Famer.
2 weeks later, Cam Neely has nothing to do with Don Sweeney. But
don't blame Neely for any of the trade deadline decisions, but he did everything else. It's unbelievable.
It is.
It's amazing. The defense you go to. You're not even like a Bruins fan from the 90s. Where does this come from? You just... Big Neely fan?
He's smart. I've been covering this team. They're a place people want to play. All you have to do is look at the salary cap. Look at the fact that you're playing Tavares, Marner, Matthews, $40 million to play on your team, and you have no other cap space to put a defenseman, and then you have this team that can keep these guys.
Cam Neely went after Tavares, by the way, and couldn't even get that job done. So he failed. Your guy, Cam Neely, went hard after him.
Well, because John Tavares wanted the money. As much as he's been sainted everywhere else for taking a little less, he wanted $11 million. You weren't going to give him $11 million.
What about Cassidy? Would you give Sweeney more credit than Cassidy if you're going to chop up the collection? Because a lot of people were saying the coaching change for St. Louis was the big turnaround for the Blues. It's kind of a similar story, although we're 2 years removed here.
The biggest stretch of games of this season is those 4 weeks even was that where Bergeron and Chara are out of the lineup and they picked up 16 points out of you know, something like at like 28 points, something like that.
Which is more depth than it is coaching.
Oh, my. Well, no, it's not depth. It's coaching to keep these guys focused. It's not depth. At that point, you didn't even have Johansson and Coyle. You were plugging in Jacob Fosbacher Carlson and trying to get, you know, Connor Clifton and Jeremy Lauzon to get their feet wet in the NHL. It wasn't the depth. Clifton has turned out to be. Yeah, now he has.
Depth.
At the time, he wasn't. No one knew anything about him. They were playing a bit forward at Providence. They weren't counting on this guy coming up. The coach is the one that instills all the faith in this and being able to stick to the system and believe in themselves and to have confidence and to play without Chara and Bergeron. In addition to how many other defensemen are out at the time, that's where you win your Jack Adams Trophy is that stretch of games where any other team almost would have folded quickly and been headed to the lottery.
Yeah. So you think Cassidy does deserve
because not only did they survive that stretch and actually thrive during that stretch and stay in the hunt, but then you come to the playoffs where you have the adversity of going down 3-2, of having McAvoy suspended, of having Chara be sick or injured, whatever he was in against Carolina, and you were able to plow through it at the most crucial time of the year. That's where they learned it, the adversity that they faced in the midseason, and the coach is the one that kept them together.
Yeah, because you can have a kind of a fluky Dan Bylsma in Pittsburgh. Came in midseason and took Crosby and the Penguins to a Stanley Cup win. And then we saw Bylsma with the Sabres and he was terrible. And it was like he won despite himself. Cassidy had that short magical burst after they fired Julian and they win and they lost in the playoffs. I would agree. Like this year just kind of proves beyond a shadow of a doubt he's a good coach.
Look at the David Backes thing. You think, I mean, David Backes is upstanding citizen, but maybe he doesn't handle it as well if he doesn't have a coach communicating to him where he stands and figuring out where he could fit in on this team and contribute.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys like that. I mean, look at those fourth liners that you're talking about. I mean, he has so much faith in Corrali and Wagner and Achari playing them against top lines and they respond the right way. Now, obviously, they have to be good enough to do it. But a lot of teams have decent, you know, skilled fourth liners and don't trust them to play in those roles. They get so caught up in the matchups. And we saw it. I mean, maybe that's the one blip of Cassidy's season, right? Game one of the Toronto series where he suddenly became a matchup master and tried to match up and he blew it. He admitted it, went back to coaching the way he usually coaches, Here you are.
That's also why I say to pump the brakes on Berube. And I mean, he's done a really good job, but came into this job with a really good roster in St. Louis, and he stunk in Philadelphia. He got a really hot goaltender in the second half of the year. It's like, how much have we seen to prove that this guy is, without a shadow of a doubt, a really, really good coach?
And he got a really hot goaltender, but I remember at the beginning, the first couple of weeks of Binnington, he was still mixing in a lot of Jake Allen, and those are like the games they were losing.
Well, look at the first month or so that he was coaching that team. I mean, it's really tough to climb out of that hole that they were in, but the first month or so that he was coaching that team, they still stunk.
Right. Well, I think the thing is, we're not going to give him, you know, Hall of Fame. We're not going to make him a Hall of Famer.
Oh, you're
right
not?
Now.
Wait till you talk to him today at media
exactly.
day.
Exactly. If I see him at media day,
Sunday Night Post.
I'm going to break up with Bruce and move right over to Berube.
Hall of Famer.
But I think it's more we just have to give him credit for what he's done those couple of months. I mean, clearly he had to keep it together. The general manager obviously gets a huge, maybe gets more credit for it, keeping the team together than, you know, any other general manager probably would have broke things up. But I mean, you can't discredit what he's accomplished to get them here.
The thing is, this has never been done in hockey history. I don't even know in sports history. You had a team 45% of the year in 15-18-4. They're dead last in the NHL. I mean, it's hard to compare hockey to other sports. I guess it doesn't seem that incredible, but when you see it on paper that they went from dead last 45% of the year in, and they finished 30-10-5, that does not seem fluky, and I know what you're saying about Berube. We don't know yet, but it certainly appears like he's a pretty good coach right now and maybe learned from those Philly years.
Well, you look
more
at
so that as a fluke.
Also, the Western Conference is trash. It was so bad this year. I'm sure that helps.
Yeah, one of the guys on the morning show this week said what would have been a better cup final matchup, like more appealing to hockey fans, which Western Conference team? And I mean, it's hard to really pinpoint that. I guess San Jose, because they've got Thornton, or they're, you know, it's a more of a major market.
Well, Vegas would have been a great matchup because the story that they've been, in fact, they got Stone. They were the team that won, basically supposedly won the trade deadline.
They got Stone, but he's not really well known beyond hockey.
But they're
fans,
a stock
right?
team.
No
Pacioretty. Well, if you brought Pacioretty back here too, you know,
it would have been a good. Yes, I think Bruins fans would have been interested, but like Winnipeg, Nashville, would any of those matchups have been more appealing at all to, just a neutral hockey fan somewhere else in America?
I think St. Louis is pretty high up there just based on the story of their second half turnaround.
I agree.
I mean, it's a good matchup, and I guess there's
some... In 1970.
Yeah.
Don't forget 1970.
And there's, I mean, there's some built-up, quote-unquote, rivalry between Boston and St. Louis. We've owned them for the past three matchups. But, I mean, there's something there. And the second half turnaround's really, really nice for a storyline.
This is not going to be a highly rated cup final, though, you wouldn't think, right? Just based on...
I mean, I don't think that San Jose would... Crush numbers, either.
Yeah, right. Most hockey fans don't even care about ratings. I don't. I consider myself in that category. Like they get mocked every Cup final year. Right. They're always just embarrassingly low. But it's just what hockey is. If you're a hockey fan, do you really care who's watching somewhere else in the country? Maybe Wyshynski will have a different take on that. We're going to have him on ESPN and senior writer there, formerly the Puck Daddy from Yahoo Sports, get his take on some of the national storylines in this series. We want your input. We're here for 2 hours. It is Sunday Skate. Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman, 617-779-7937. Who should get the most credit for the Bruins being here? Third Cup final in 9 years. And saying that, though, while Kalman's getting a big head, big ego for all these solo shows that he's been doing lately, you're a Bruins fan, even though you're significant favorites in this series, right? Like 60% by the Vegas odds. I mean, they're a substantial favorite to win the series. You can't get too cocky. Bruins fans that go back as far as that 1970 Cup final win have seen quite a bit of failure in this round. They've lost 6 of the last 7 Cup finals appearances. Not to be a negative guy here on this morning, but just to point out, and the last one in 2013, Matt, you covered, and they had a 2-1 lead with 2 minutes to go in Game 6, and Tuukka Rask was part of the choke job. I'm not saying he was the guy that blew it, but that has still got to be fresh in the minds of Bruins fans, right? Six years ago,
I don't know. I don't think Bruins fans necessarily care too much about that at this point. I think they don't care about losing a cup final
amidst this great run of Boston success.
Anybody with a reasonable mind, and I don't know who we're necessarily speaking to at this hour of the day, but if you have a reasonable mind, you realize what a great accomplishment it was to come from where they came in the first run against Toronto in Game 7 to get through to where they got to face a historic Chicago Blackhawks team in a lockout shortened season to even have a lead in that game with how banged up they were. You know, the great Tyler Seguin, Chris Kelly, Dan Pie line carrying the offense. And a loss is a loss. I mean, they probably weren't winning Game 7, right? Patrice Bergeron was in the hospital.
Well, come on. I mean, Game 7s are totally random. And you had a 2-1 lead with 2 minutes to go. I don't care how inferior. I don't really care how insignificant it was, whatever, that you feel like they were compared to Chicago. That's a tough way to blow it.
I mean, it's a mid-dynasty team that they lost to in the Chicago Blackhawks. And, I mean, it's a tough way to lose for sure, especially on home ice. But at the end of the day, I think you have to kind of just say that the Blackhawks were the better team and you were massively banged up and they didn't deserve to win that series.
If they lose this one, would it be much more painful then?
Yes.
Not even close?
Yeah. They should win the series. They're the best team in the playoffs.
At this point, there's no excuses. I mean, you've had 10 days off. You're almost fully healthy. I mean,
well, that's the excuse. You've had 10 days off.
if I hear that once, if they go out and get wiped out tomorrow and tell me that they were too rusty, I might lose it.
Our friend Gary Tanguay was all over this from the start. He was very angry at the NHL for their long layoff. Yes. Okay. And setting this
how would
up,
he know how long the layoff is? He's never watched hockey in his life.
Tanguay, he's a hockey savant. Here's what Gary had to say.
Well, I've been covering things for a while, as we know. So I have a sports biological clock. And my biological clock just told me today, without looking at any social media, without looking at a calendar, there needed to be a game today. This really sucks. The NHL, they've really screwed this up. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's stupid. It's one of the reasons why the NHL can't get out of their own way. I understand people will be critical of the sport. You can't see the puck on TV or whatever. The National Hockey League is the fourth or fifth most popular sport. It's behind football. It's behind baseball. It's behind basketball. I don't know if it's still behind NASCAR. Maybe it's behind soccer. I don't know. But it's ridiculous. There should be a game tonight. My biological clock is ticking, and it's telling me there should be a game tonight. It's so stupid. You've got the holiday weekend. You should have 2 or 3 games over the weekend. The fact that they're playing on Monday just shows what just morons the NHL is.
I haven't even heard someone use the term biological clock since Marissa Tomei and my cousin Vinny. What the hell is that guy talking about? That's amazing. He knows nothing.
My biological clock just told me today.
It's ticking like this.
He knows nothing about hockey, so he's decided to rip on the league for not having a game on a certain day that he thinks there should be a game about.
Well,
how does DJ even sit in the same room with that guy without passing out?
I like that clip because you can just hear how more and more furious he gets. Yeah. As he gets along. But I mean, we talked about it on Thursday. It is sort of crazy that there's this long of a break, especially because there was no break in between any of the prior rounds. Like, if you want to start the final on whatever certain day to make sure that it gets into mid-June, then give the guys a couple days in between rounds. And there just wasn't that. It was game after game after game after game. After one round wraps up, they start the next one immediately. So, I mean, that's the way that I look at it. Just give the guys a day or two off in between rounds.
Which is morons the NHL is.
Right.
I mean, full disclosure, I take a paycheck from NHL.com in order to be able to sit here and have a life. Nonetheless,
Cam signs it.
There is a league calendar that you have to hit certain dates. Now, yes, they could have built in a few extra days in the other round and still met that calendar. But when you get to the point where the Sharks and the Blues were going to go six or had a potential to go six, you couldn't wait and see if they were going to go six before you set this date. And so, you know, obviously the Blues have had a more reasonable wait. The Bruins get penalized a little bit for their success. But biological clock have to do with anything. What a visual, by the way.
Friday or Saturday. He was ready.
God.
I mean, you wouldn't
Why doesn't he just go watch old Celtics tapes? Can you ask me?
Yeah, I know. The Celtics are going to get in the way of this Boston sports slam. They're going to be forever
I know. So
scarred.
Why isn't he out getting mad about that somewhere?
He should be. He should be ranting about that.
I'm more disappointed that DJ Bean doesn't just punch him in the face.
Well, DJ's down at TD Garden in that clip, Matt. So he probably won't.
Right. Yeah, you heard the sticks and pucks in the background.
And I forgive you, DJ.
You'll be down there today, right? It's media day.
Media day. You know what? Media day is where they feed the media and then they gawk at them.
Wiggy is going to media day.
No.
Yes, he's going to be down there asking questions. So you're already upset at the volume of NHL writers and reporters that are there. Wiggy will be part of that. He'll be on tomorrow for filling in for Mutton Callahan Memorial Day edition.
See, now I take it back, Pete. I told you the other night that, you know, NHL Stanley Cup media day didn't involve like all these cuckoos coming out of the woodwork to go there, like the Super Bowl media day.
It's going to get there.
And now Wiggy's going to be there.
This is why you shouldn't wish, if you're a hockey fan, for the sport to get bigger than it is. It's fine. It's like it's at a perfect
comfort zone. I never wish any of that. I don't care about replying to the casual fan. What do I give a...
Well, we'll talk about Wiggy. He has been so focused on Chara for 2 weeks. We've had to just like... I can't get away from it in the morning. But
it's ironic that the guy who had like five catches as a tight end did all that blocking and all these things that you're supposed to like appreciate away from the ball can't appreciate the guy who does the most work away from the puck.
Yeah, I mean, he had a hamster named Chara, too, as we found from old tweets, which have become a dangerous thing to search old tweets
around.
Oh, wow.
Does he know the dog named Lucic? Do they hang out together?
Whose dog is that?
He who will not be named.
Oh.
The greatest sports writer who ever lived.
That's a blind spot for me. We will get into Pete Blackburn's matchups, too, because he broke it down, man, on CBS Sports earlier this week. And he broke it up not just in forwards, top six, bottom six forwards. We'll go through that. What else you guys want to get to today? Of course, we have Wyshynski coming up top of the hour. MVP predictions. I want your cup finals predictions, of course, and listeners as well to Sunday Skate. 617-779-7937. How do you see this series going? What's going to happen? We'll review how St. Louis got here and a little bit of the Bruins as well. It's like ancient history at this point. It has been so long. All that, but first, a trending on WEI.
Now back to a Stanley Cup Finals edition of Sunday Skate with Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman on Sports Radio WEI.
Six attackers on the ice for the Blackhawks trying to tie this up. Jonathan Tate, center, Bickle, scores! With a minute 16 to go, Jonathan Toews to Brian Bickle, 2-2 tie. Another tight game. The leak shot off speed, stopped by Rask. Here's a chance for a Dario tip. Boland has given the Blackhawks the lead with 59 seconds to go. Up the boards, Bassey cut to center. Here's the captain, Toews, with an empty net, and he can't get it, but he's run out the clock. The Blackhawks have snatched victory from the hands of defeat. Chicago has won the Stanley Cup.
Toodaloo.
There it is. Just a wake-up call. Just a don't-get-cocky reminder. That was 2013.
You know, we keep
Thanks
harping,
a lot for that.
If we keep harping on 2013 this way, they're gonna mistake us for Brand X. No, that's all they do is talk about the negative things that happened 5-6 years ago.
But you would say it's relevant because Tuca or Puka,
that was his only
Cup Final experience.
Which, by the way, reminds me that if the Bruins do win this Cup and Tuca Rask is Stanley Cup champion, I'm going to risk my job here to call into Brand X and talk to the guy that Wiggy calls, the man and the cosign, and let them and give them a piece of my mind.
Although that's not Tuca's only Cup Final experience, because I have a Mutt gave me a Bruins 2011, one of these nice like retrospective books of their Cup Final, and there's a picture of Tuca in Finland with the cup in a hot tub.
Yeah.
It's a great picture. Obviously, he didn't play any of those games.
Nobody opened the door and closed the door better on the bench than Tuukka Rask in the Stanley Cup.
Well, and, hey, a lot of credit given to Jaro Halak this year, though he hasn't played as well either. But I was telling you on our podcast special edition earlier this week, Matt Kalman, that looking back at some of the Globe articles, the Bruins were up 2-1 in that series, and it was halfway home was the headline in the Globe, and Taves had no points, and Kane one assist through the first three games of the series, and obviously things could change in a long series. Things turned around. We all agree that Blackhawks team is better than this Blues team. Is this St. Louis Blues team they're going to face, Pete, though, the best team the Bruins have played in this year's postseason?
Yeah, I asked that question of Matt earlier in the week. I'm not convinced that they're better than Toronto in round one. I think Toronto was a really, really good team. I think maybe the Blues are a bit more complete top to bottom, but I'm not sold on this Blues team being necessarily the best that they've faced in the playoffs, honestly. Maybe the most complete, but not the scariest.
You to use your quote earlier, the West is junk?
The West is junk. It was junk this year.
But their division isn't junk. I mean, Winnipeg and Nashville aren't junk, right? So
but, I mean, they had to fight for that division.
And still almost won it.
Right.
The thing that impresses me most about them, I had picked Winnipeg to go to the Cup Final. They took a 2-0 lead in that series, and then it was tied at 2. And in Game 5, they're on the road, and we're down 2-0 in the third period and came back to win that game. Schwartz had the game winner with 56 seconds left. That is unbelievable. You're in Winnipeg. Getting ready to go down 3-2 in the series and down 2-0 in the game, and you come back and win. That's an unbelievable comeback. They also overcame the hand pass in the Sharks series.
That's one of the things. That was my answer to Pete earlier in the week, was that Toronto might be more talented, but St. Louis has the gumption.
Yeah, and they were down 3-2 to Dallas.
And the determination that they at least don't have, and that it gets you here when you have enough talent to put that together, and I think that's what you need to win in the playoffs. I mean, we said that before the trade deadline when we were trying to grade like teams like Toronto, that they still didn't address the need to have that playoff experience and that ability to handle adversity, which they couldn't even handle success up 3-2 on the Bruins in the series. So, you know, and then St. Louis, like you're saying, making these comebacks and overcoming these obstacles.
A lot of star players are out, obviously, across the league, but you can't compare Braden Schenn and Ryan O'Reilly talent-wise to Austin Matthews and John Tavares, right? So the Leafs had a better 1-2 center punch for sure, although Ryan O'Reilly's up for the Selke. He's one of the best defensive centers in the league, and I think it's going to be the key to the series. But Toronto for sure had more firepower up front. They had a more prolific coach by far, comparing Babcock. Bab Suck, as Mark James would call him, to Craig Berube. Better goaltender by most people's expectations and standards, although Binnington is as good as anybody in the league. The blue line is the clear difference here, though. So is it like a weird matchup thing where Boston eventually did exploit Toronto and particularly their last defensive pair? You're probably not going to have that ability to do that in this series, right?
But I mean, you mentioned the forwards up front and the Bergeron line and his shutdown ability was able to limit Tavares in that line. And, you know, if you look at that and compare it to what St. Louis has, it's a lot worse. So I think that if you're looking at a big difference, it's probably up front because they have less up front than Toronto does.
Right. But are they fueled by the defense corps? I mean, is that the key to the team? If you're a St. Louis fan, like, that's what's gotten us here. Pietrangelo, Parayko.
I think they're just more balanced and there's more of a threat there than Toronto.
So just a more complete team.
Exactly.
Is a way to phrase it.
A better team at the defensive end.
Which in the NHL, I would say, is a sign that you're a better team. A more complete team is a team that's more dangerous in this
And that's what you have to have. I mean, I assume you're trying to get to this point that you don't need to have the $10 and $11 million players and you need to just spread it out. You need to spread it out financially and you need to spread it out talent-wise. You need to have guys playing their roles. And that's what got the Bruins here is guys like Backes and Corrali and people like that accepting their roles. And just filling that, you know, putting Torrey Krug, putting ego aside, and that's what the Blues have done. And that's where Berube comes in, that he got those guys to do that, even though in January they probably should have been in, you know, let's pad our stats mode. They got into let's be a team mode, and that's what Bruce Cassidy has done as well.
Is Vladimir Tarasenko the most dangerous forward they will have faced in this postseason?
No, I think Tavares is.
Tavares is?
Yeah.
He and Tavares and Ovechkin were the top three goal scorers in the league since 2014. So obviously they're somewhat comparable.
The one that scared me the most before this series was Panarin.
I thought so too.
And they solved him pretty quickly. But yeah, that was the one that I thought, just because of the way his game is built, him being a wing as opposed to Tavares, I had faith that, you know, if Bergeron and Tavares were head to head for long enough, that they would slow them down. But Panarin, and that's why Tarasenko maybe scares me more than Tavares too, just the fact that he's out there on the wing and it's hard to maybe slow him down. He might get some shifts against a Pasternak or someone who's not known for the 200-foot game, and he might just be able to get free. But nonetheless, we've never ever in a playoff series in the decade since, we've never seen a wing really, or any forward really, go off and dominate the Bruins. I mean, the Blackhawks beat the Bruins by being a complete team, a balanced team. You haven't seen...
But Kane was a factor, obviously.
Obviously, a factor for sure, but we never see anyone just go off and win a series or beat them single-handedly. So that always gives you hope that they can just slow these guys down.
Tarasenko had 33 goals this season. It's not like he was a 100-point guy. I mean, Marchand had 32 more points than he did. I would say if you put Pasternak up against Tarasenko this year, pretty comparable, right? I mean, in terms of threats as far as wingers.
Yeah, Marchand, sure.
So both of those guys. I mean, Tarasenko and Pasternak actually seem kind of similar to me in this series. I could see both disappearing for large stretches. They're both a little streaky, good goal scorers. Both need the power play to get going, especially Tarasenko. That's where he scored the bulk of his goals.
And Pasternak's, defense, though, it's like if you quote-unquote disappear, you have to look back at the fact that how are they being used as far as him and Bergeron and Marchand.
Yeah.
Again, when they weren't scoring the Toronto series, they were doing the job defensively. I'm not sure that, Tarasenko was ever cast in that role for St. Louis.
Probably true. That line has got to score for St. Louis to win, right?
Yeah.
The Schwartz, Tarasenko, right, Shen top pairing has got to get going, which, if you get into some of the matchups and the games in St. Louis, may be all the more critical for that. Now, you got into a fight. It was a virtual fight because you and Dale haven't done a show together yet since writing that book. We did one podcast. But Dale claims Chara will be out there for the matchup against the top line, including Tarasenko. I think we have Dale declaring that guarantee earlier this week.
Because I would. I'll tell you where Zdeno Chara will be crucial in this series. Vladimir Tarasenko. He's going to spend most of his time, in fact, 98% of his time on the ice, will be against that top line for the St. Louis Blues.
But he...
Okay, so... You disputed
It sounded like someone else was actually going to disagree.
Yeah, Wiggy was going to disagree.
Is that allowed on Dale's show, disagreement?
Well, Wiggy was going to say Chara's going to be a healthy scratch, so we cut that off.
No, I mean, Pete and I both agreed the other night, I believe, that it's going to be Bergeron's line against the Shen line with Tarasenko, and you'll have Krug and Carlo. Carlo, the number one shutdown defenseman on the Bruins, facing the number one offensive threat on the Blues. That's the way it'll work. And then Chara and McAvoy, as we know, Bruce Cassidy has been transparent. He wants to have those guys against the heavier line, which would be the O'Reilly line.
Has Cassidy said that?
He hasn't said it specifically to the series, but he's talked about that. I mean, we've had plenty of time to talk to him about every matchup under the sun.
Yeah.
And just talking about and giving credit to Carlo and Krug and the way they've become kind of a shutdown pair this postseason, better than, even when you look back at second pairs for the Bruins and those runs, the Ferentz-Boychuk pair. This is definitely a better shutdown pair. And saying that that's the thinking. You want to have Krug and Carlo against maybe the quicker, lighter lines and have Chara go against heavier players.
Yeah, I think without a doubt, Brandon Carlo is your shutdown defenseman at this point in time. And Vladimir Tarasenko is the one guy that you need to shut down, enemy number one. So I think that Carlo gets most of the minutes against Tarasenko.
And Carlo had most of the minutes against Panarin, right? And against Teravainen.
Right.
Right.
In the Carolina series. Now, you talked about where Tarasenko plays. I don't know if they flop him back and forth, but he has been right wing.
Okay.
Correct?
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
So that would lead to Chara actually being because he's on that side of the ice.
Yeah, but Torrey Krug, as we talked about, has become a much better defender in these playoffs, at least because
he's
focusing more on the defensive side. And, Tarasenko has all the tools, but clearly, Carlo, he's not going to just be skating that lane for first of all. But second of all, just he's been focusing so much more on the defensive end. You don't really have to worry too much about that. Plus, I mean, we didn't really get to this on Thursday night, is the back checking and the back pressure from these forwards in this playoffs. is a huge reason why these things are happening to him. Does not get nearly enough credit. I mean, the way these four lines are playing, especially against Carolina, where the defense was such a threat, and maybe that's comparable a little bit to St. Louis. I mean, you didn't neutralize those defensemen offensively just by having great goaltending and by having strong defensemen. I mean, the way these forwards are playing all out, it's helping Torrey Krug, it's helping Grizzlick, it's helping Chara to not have to handle these guys too far out of, you know, and then get pinned in behind in front of his own net.
I would say generally that's the case, but if in game one, St. Louis has been called a Columbus-esque, right? A good forechecking team, good pressure, physical. If they get into a cycle game somehow and Tarasenko is blowing around Krug, you know what I mean? They're
well,
running
yeah,
circles around Krug.
Obviously. Anybody,
it wouldn't shock me to see them change at some point in the series and Chara gets out there.
Or maybe just Grizzlick. I mean, you know, the way Grizzlick moves the puck. I mean, that's the key here, too. Don't forget. It's not about being if the Blues get them into their cycle game, they're going to be a threat and going to be difficult for anyone to handle. The point is that this team, their, you know, job number one is move the puck out of the zone as quick as possible and get moving the other way and not get hemmed in defending. And that's been a huge thing, too, for Krug and for Grizzlick. They haven't been hemmed in. They haven't been pressured as much because they've been playing so well.
How good is that top line in general of St. Louis? They're all first-round picks across the board, former first-round picks. You know, Shen came in a trade with Philly. Schwartz has been there for 8 years, and now Tarasenko's been there for seven. So this is their core. I mean, that's kind of the comparables between the Bruins and the Blues. Even though their core has never experienced cup success, they've both stuck with a set number of guys for a long time. But Schwartz had 11 goals this season. He was pretty disappointing. He's been obviously impressive in the playoffs, but when people call the Bruins' top line the perfection line, is this line
who calls
them
that? No, okay. We don't do that on this show.
Well, you joke about it.
No.
It's in the game notes.
It's the Holy Trinity.
The official NHL publication calls them the perfection line.
Oh, now you're going to adhere to the league policy now?
But they
you're a rebel, Ken.
Should I fear them more than I do? I don't. I mean, Braden Schenn is going to beat you in a cup final? That doesn't seem...
I mean, Schwartz and Tarasenko have been the two guys on that line that have made it go over the past however many months. And you mentioned Schwartz's goals total. He had a terrible start to the season. I think that I put some of that on Mike Yeo and his ability to utilize him. He had a better second half, and obviously his postseason has been really good. He's exceeded that regular season total during the postseason. So he's a strong net front presence. I think that they're definitely worth fearing, but I don't think that that's the most fearsome top line that this team has faced in the postseason.
But that's just it. It goes back to what I just said before. That first line's probably not going to, you know, win them this
series.
That's
not going to be the
series. They have to contribute, but they have to get mostly contributions from at least three of the four lines, and that's how they got past San Jose, right? That fourth line kind of carried them. Right. I mean, it's a fourth line that's definitely not really a fourth line. They've got a $5.5 million, you know, wing on that line in Alex Steen. I mean, this is not a team that's going to, you're not worried about, you know, focusing just on that one line. Now, clearly, you want to have Carlo and Krug out there and Bergeron against them because you don't want them to have a chance to go off, but nonetheless, you're not thinking, oh, if we take them out, we're going to win this series easily because they've gotten by this far with the balanced scoring. It's a complete team. It's not a one-line team.
And it's a team that's, you know, sort of built on the other end of it, not scoring, but preventing scoring. The San Jose series, Tomas Hertl, Timo Meier, Joe Pavelski, Evander Kane, 430 goal scorers combined for four goals in the six games of the series. Hertl and Pavelski obviously didn't play in the last game, so that's part of it. But they took away top talent on the other side of it, which seems like the bigger threat coming in here, that they shut down Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak,
I mean,
and those guys go.
It comes right back. That line, obviously, like I said, they don't have to. The Bergeron line doesn't have to necessarily, you know, have a big offensive series. They could, you know, do it at the other end, and get, the Bruins can get by. But you want some contributions from them, and that Parayko Bomeister pair is going to be difficult for them because of the way they're able to shut down plays at the blue line and use their reach and their strength and their size. And if the Bruins play, if that line plays like it played, you know, early in the Toronto series and maybe stretches of the Columbus series, they're going to have a hard time of it. If they just keep it simple, which is what we've seen every time. I mean, it always baffles me that when athletes know what they have to do and don't do it. I mean, it's one thing if the other team blocks a shot, makes a save, you lose doing what you're playing to your strengths, but when you get away from your strengths, I never understand that. And so hopefully, you know, 10 days to pound it into their brains here, hopefully the Bergeron line goes out there and does what they're supposed to do as far as just, you know, getting the puck behind those defensemen and going to work that way.
So a lot of 2-1 games, is that what we're looking at here?
Probably. I think it's going to be a low-scoring series and sort of a grinded-out sort of longer-ish series for sure.
We'll talk more about the matchups. And Greg Wyshynski from ESPN joins us at the top of the 9 o'clock hour, 2-hour Sunday Skate presented by Wise Snacks and Star Market. Matt Kalman and Pete Blackburn are here. I'm Ken Laird. This is Sports Radio, WEEI.
Now back to a Stanley Cup Finals edition of Sunday Skate with Ken Laird, Pete Blackburn, and Matt Kalman on Sports Radio, WEEI.
Wait, whatever. Come on, Dave. Okay, let's go. What do you got? What do you want to say about the Red Sox?
Oh, screw St. Louis.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. At least somebody said it. Thank you.
Screw St. Louis.
Okay.
And them in that arch they got. Somebody ought to go up there and like run a saw through the middle of that arch.
Thank you, David. I like it. I like it. What else you got?
Screw the NFL.
Feisty Bradfo show yesterday. I like that.
Ironically, that guy was calling in from the Anheuser-Busch Brewery.
Screw St. Louis. I'll say it. I'll echo that. 7-3 Boston against St. Louis. Listen, pro sports titles.
My hatred of St. Louis goes all the way back to 1985. Come on, Mets Cardinals. Whitey Herzog called the Mets pond scum.
That's going to be a factor, yeah. I think, in this
absolutely
this series.
Cardinals fans are terrible.
They are the worst.
They're the worst.
You know why? Because they don't. Because they cheer there even when their players strike out. They're like the anti.
But the Blues are totally different. I would agree with you there. They are cocky beyond belief. But Blues fans have been. This is unbelievable. They've had 42 postseason appearances. 42 playoff appearances. And this is their fourth cup final, okay, but they have not won a cup final game yet. This has been 49 years, as we know, between appearances. It leaves now only Pete Blackburn's Toronto Maple Leafs, 52 years between cup final appearances.
At least we've upgraded from one round to the other. We went from Ken Junk to John Hamm.
True. I saw Pete writing about the office battle between Pam and Jim. So
probably the worst thing I've had to write about.
They forced you to write that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Could you not sense the snark in the article?
So somebody at CBS is firing off an email to Pete, hey, please write about the office battle between Pam and Jim.
Did we ever get Ken Jung's postmortems on that series? Was he heartbroken? Or?
Good question.
I mean, you know.
John, look into that. See if Ken has spoken since that very, very close series finished up 3 months ago. what did we come back with there? Oh, that was always the Bradfo call.
Yeah.
So the point of that is there is some hatred, I guess, for St. Louis based on all these meetings, but it's not really that fierce. I would say mostly the Blues are going to be the rooting interest, the fan favorite for neutral people everywhere just because of the anti-Boston hate, and the Blues are tough to hate, period, right? I mean, who on this team can you really get in a tizzy
Jay Bouwmeester for being the most overrated player in the National Hockey League the last 15 years.
Win one for Jay.
They're still saying win one for Jay. Why didn't he go out and win one for himself? He never does anything to contribute to his team.
No, he's played in 1,100 games.
They finally found a role for him. Just go out there and play defense.
But he's their shutdown
pair.
This
whole idea that he was a puck-moving defenseman.
It's not because of him, I'll tell you that.
He was an up-and-coming Paul Coffey or something. It's unbelievable how much Canada has pumped this guy up. If he had ever played for the Leafs, he stinks.
Now in the matchups at CBS Sports, Pete Blackburn gave it a push. He couldn't even make a pick. Bruins, Blues,
I think it's
defense
even.
Matchups.
I think it's
even
all
though
it.
You think Bouwmeester stinks.
I thought you were saying he thought the series was going to be a tie.
No. The defensive matchup, I think.
Edge
is
on the
a
blue
push.
Line. Yes.
Absolutely. You can't discredit that defense.
I would
core.
Give St. Louis
they're
the
solid.
Edge. I would give them the edge. Pareko's been awesome.
Pareko's great.
If it was before the playoffs started, I would say, yeah, you're right. But the way Grizzlick and Krug have played and this group has gotten together, even in games where they've had to play Stephen Kamfer and John Moore, I can't undervalue the Bruins' defense at this point.
Pietrangelo is a better player than Chara at this point. He's their captain, of course. He had 41-point season. He doesn't score a ton of goals, but he does have like a knack for getting it through from the point. He's got just a good presence there. 11th year in the league. It's weird, though, that he called David Backes after last season and asked him how to be a captain. Basically was asking Backes for advice of how to, because they didn't make the playoffs for the first
weird?
Time in 8 years. Well, it's just weird now that the series is upon us. And here's, you've got.
Well, he was also in, Backes was also in his wedding party, he said. So that's a little weirder, I would say.
Yeah. But does Backes have secrets of how Pietrangelo has handled the room in St. Louis? Is there going to be a real X's and O's? Stare down here. Backes played with like 11 guys on the team. It is odd. And obviously was their leader for many years. A different player now. That the storyline has kind of been run into the ground already, too, as everything else has.
I don't think it's really a factor. It's a factor for us having to talk about something for 10 days. But other than that, I don't think once the series starts, it's going to matter.
If anybody has secrets on the other team, I think it's maybe the Bruins on Jordan Binnington because he was their AHL guy. They groomed him.
And plus, Bob Asensa has the secrets on every goalie, it seems. He really breaks these guys down. I mean,
he's
Bob
not a
Brodsky
big guy, Binnington. He's what, 6 foot, 6'1", something like that. He's just...
he's unflappable.
He's... Technically he sound, I guess is the phrase. Got glove on the left hand. He's always in that crouch. He's got the glove up there and presence ready. But they've done, I think the point is their blue line is so good. They've done a good job of keeping some of those stars of San Jose and the other series out of the paint. They've made his job pretty easy.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't totally impressed with the way that he played in the Western Conference Final. I think that the defense made it pretty easy on him. They cleared out a lot of traffic in front. There wasn't a ton of pressure on him. I mean, Matt said it. I mean, he's looked, quote-unquote, unflappable at points. It's just like his mentality as a rookie has been solid, but I haven't been blown away by the way he's played. A 9-14 save percentage isn't out of this world, so I think he's beatable.
I think so, too. As far as the animosity, there was a fight between Maroon and Chara in the regular season, their second career fight. I wonder if that creeps up again somehow. Maroon has unbelievable numbers against Boston. He is, writing this down, in 10 games against Tuca, he has 7 goals.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty wild.
I think he has at least one hat trick, maybe
Pat Maroon,
two hat tricks.
And O'Reilly's had pretty good numbers against the Bruins all time, too. Of course, they played him a lot with Buffalo. So does that create any – I mean, do you sense anything after the whistle in this series? Is Marchand going to be active? Or
it better be. It better be still after the whistle.
It's going to be a physical series. It's going to be chippy.
But the Columbus series, the Bruins, I thought, did a great job of just staying away from all that stuff. You know, Columbus tried to sort of get him in the weeds, and they didn't, where Marchand was coming off the emotional Toronto series, and he just stayed
– until he bopped the guy in the head.
That's true.
Still undefeated since he bopped the guy in the head. It's the bop heard around the world.
Well, I mean, he's going back to the Cup Finals in 2011. He was speed bagging a Sedin. They were showing that footage NBC Boston the other day. So this is when he rises to the occasion.
I mean, if there's no scrums after the whistles, then something's wrong because that means both teams aren't trying, or at least one of them isn't trying.
So you think Marchand should be over the edge in this series?
Not over the edge. They should all be to the edge. They should all be in their faces.
Not robotic and skate away and avoid conflict.
Their number one, I mean, whether we were talking about the defense course, but their number one advantage is the fact that they have four heavy lines. So you're going to have to try to at least match the physicality to a point where when you're not able to use your quickness against them, you're going to have to go body to body, especially a couple of the Bruins lines.
But one of the reasons they beat San Jose was they injured San Jose, right? I mean, they were physical to the point where they're taking guys out of there. So to a point, I hear what you're saying, but you don't really want to get bogged down.
You don't want to sit there and take a hit every time, but especially if they're trying to get in Tuca's face, you're going to have to stand up for yourself.
But if you're the more talented team, you want this to be a series that is less on physicality and extracurriculars.
There's still the element of the Bruins that maybe like teams like Tampa and Toronto lack that you still – that's part of their game.
After you, you're going to want to answer. That's the thing.
Maybe initiate, too, a little bit. I mean, I don't want David Backes to go out there and think he's back in 10 years ago being
a
scorer. I still want him going out there hitting people.
Or too nice because
it's Achari, these guys.
Greg Wyshynski is a senior hockey writer for ESPN. He's been around various hockey joints through the years. He will join us to get his national perspective on this series. An hour to go of Sunday Skate. Be a part of it. 617-779-7937. It is Ken Laird, Matt Kalman, and Pete Blackburn here on Sports Radio, WEI.